Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today on the show, I am first going to be talking to one of the curators out at the International Quilt Study Center and Museum from Lincoln, Nebraska, and then we're going to talk a little bit about signature quilts. Our second segment, I have got a designer on, a fabric designer, Mark Cesarek, and we're going to find out about how he works. And then the last segment, I have a duo of designers that have just written a new book. We're going to find out how that went and talk a little bit about their style to Jackie Garrick and Katie Peterson. So first, have you ever participated in a signature quilt project? You know, where you sign a block and then that quilt is given to somebody as a gift, or maybe, you know, the quilt's been raffled because, you know, children's signatures, they raffle it at school. Well, you know, this is not a new concept. There are signatures on quilts since probably the beginning of time. The great people over at the International Quilt Study Center Museum have come across many, many signature quilts, and they did a bunch of research on it, and I'm very really excited to have Carolyn Ducey, the curator of collections, here, because she's going to talk to us about signature quilts. Hi, Carolyn. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back.
You know, your team over there has, you know, got curious about signatures on quilts. I mean, what do they think about when they found quilts like this?
You know, they always offer us an opportunity to research the quilts in an in-depth way that a quilt without a name or dates can. It's always just really a thrill for us because we know that if we've got a name, there's a possibility that we're really going to be able to track down information at least on that person. And sometimes we actually get really lucky and we can find out that the answer to that elusive question of why a quilt was made.
That's always really important. I think don't you think every quilter wants to know that? You know, why did somebody put all that time and effort into this quilt?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's always funny because people always say, oh, gosh, if quilts could only talk. And I heard the best joke one time when somebody said, well, you know, Beth, you know, quilts are used in a kind of intimate situation. Maybe it's good that they don't talk. But as a researcher, we really want to be able to answer those questions. And it's something that today, you know, I just urge people to think about that in the future. People are really going to know, is this a graduation quilt? Was this a wedding quilt? Was it just something that a group of friends made for another individual maybe who was suffering from an illness? Those are the kind of things we just hope people will add to their quilts today.
And a lot more people are putting signatures on and labels, really elaborate labels. Did you ever find those kind of labels in the older quilts?
You know, we didn't find them in the way you think, like, say, an actual label. But what we did find were blocks that were dedication blocks and that they were dedicated to an individual. And sometimes they would say exactly why they were dedicated, you know, for service to a church, perhaps, or for a wedding. But that's really rare to find.
Now, you created an exhibit called What's in a Name. Tell me a little bit about why you created this exhibit.
Well, you know, I was really inspired by the work of two volunteer genealogists who came to me and said, you know, we'd love to do family genealogy. Is there a way that we could help you with the quilts? And when they started really digging into the names that we had on the quilts and really looking into the history of maybe a church that was related, we just found such incredible information. And I really wanted a chance to show people the possibilities of what's out there. And also, it's just a way for us to continue to research our collection. And what we found are some of our quilts have now become so well researched that they really are almost a benchmark for so many other quilts in the collection. And it was just such an exciting discovery process that we really wanted to highlight that.
I think it's an amazing collection to be able to put together things with signatures that are have some importance. There's several quilts in this particular exhibit. I thought it'd be fun for you to tell us about. Can you tell us first about the celebrity quilt that's out there with all the celebrity signatures?
Well, it is such a fun quilt. It was made as a bicentennial quilt. You know, that's when many people really came back to quilting and found it really fascinating. But Mina Kuthi, with the name of the maker, you know, she really took that idea from a quilt that was made in the 19th century, the idea of collecting signatures from celebrities. Mm-hmm. So in 1974, she began writing letters to people like movie stars like Carol Burnett and Liberace. She went to presidential figures, Richard Nixon, the vice president. Donald Rumsfeld signed a block for her. What she did is she sent these white squares of fabric or diamond shapes out in an envelope and said, would you mind signing my block for my quilt and returning it? And out of 200 people that she asked, 155 people returned signed blocks.
That is amazing.
And what's crazy is that Mina was just so careful with everything that she did with the quilt. She kept every single piece of paper, every envelope. She recorded how long it took her to make the quilt, every person she sent these letters out to. And her family kept all that paperwork. So
now,
when the quilt came to us, we had an amazing record.
I was going to say, did she actually ask them why she wanted their signature? Did she explain it in, like, the letter to them?
You know, we don't have a copy of the letter she sent out. What we have is replies that say, I'm honored to be included in this special bicentennial quilt.
I think she
probably was just saying, you know, I just really want this quilt to be kind of a snapshot in time, and I want you to be included. And it's just an amazing piece that really tells us so much about what was important to her. She lived in Chicago. She included a lot of Chicago news people and people that would have been quite well-known locally, but mm-hmm. she also really took it to a national level. And the stationery and the things that you see that come back, you know, Carol Burnett, even after Mina completed the quilt, she sent an image of the full-size quilt to everyone who signed. And a couple of people actually thanked her for sending that picture. So Carol Burnett sent back this wonderful note saying, wow, what a great quilt. I'm really honored to be included in it. And that's just amazing.
The fact that all of that documentation was there, too, is just extraordinary. It's like such a windfall to get not only the quilt, but all the paperwork.
Absolutely. We just don't ever, rarely do we see that conclusive of a picture. So it's really a gem of the collection.
Now, you have another quilt from the Wister family, which has this beautifully inked, or maybe it's embroidered, block in it. Tell me about that quilt.
Well, the Wister quilt is really one of the most exceptional quilts in our collection. It was made in 1843, and a lot of the reason that it's so special is because it was made by a woman who had the wealth and the time to really lavish her attention on this quilt. And the family tree block is so unusual. It's actually inked. It's drawn with this incredible detail. It's probably only about 12 inches tall, so it's not really much larger than many of the blocks on the quilt. But it actually is the family lineage of the Caspar Wister family from 1717, when they arrived in the United States, all the way up to the 1840s.
And she got all that on that little tiny block?
Well, and what's interesting about it is that in some places, you know, she filled in these little, like, round circles with the names of the family members. And in other places, they just left circles blank. And some people aren't included. So we kind of thought, why was there room for some of these people that didn't get included? Maybe a family rift there or something. But
yeah.
So it was fascinating. But yes, it's just amazingly done. And what we really feel like that quilt shows us is the work of professionals who would have been working, a professional inscriber who would have done all of that detail, because that's just not something that you or I could pick up and do, especially when it's ink on cloth.
So at that time period, there were actually people that she could hire to write all that out for her on
mm-hmm.
fabric.
We really think so. We haven't seen advertisements for people to do that specific work, though we do know there were calligraphers and individuals who encouraged say, your business cards or your visiting cards. So we do think it was a skilled artist that did that.
Now, you have another quilt in this particular exhibit. Let's finish up with that one, the Bailey family quilt. Why was that quilt unique and important?
Well, you know, it became, it was not one of the most, it didn't have a lot of presence to it. It's a beautiful blue and white kind of Irish chain design. But as you look closer, you realize that a couple things really made it stand out. One was that it looks like they used a typewriter to create these names. And that would have been really something quite new at the time. Probably in the 1870s or so was when we discovered that the first typewriters came out, which gave us kind of an idea on date. But what was really fascinating is, and in many of the cases in the quilts that we researched, not only do we look at the quilts, but we also go back and we move forward and we try to find family members. We try to figure out who is related to this, what could they tell us. Well, in doing this research, we started looking for the Baileys in Trumbull County, Ohio, and we came across the Bailey Tree Farm. And so my aunt Joan sent out a letter and said, know anything about this? And the first brother kind of said, you know, I don't know much about this. You need to talk to my brother, the historian. And sure enough, he was able to provide a church history for us. And so what we ended up finding was the actual documentation of the quilt being made by the Ladies' Aid Society of the Lutheran Church. And they made it in 1879, and it was their way of raising money for the new church, which the Baileys gave the land for. And the church, which was built then in 1880, still stands today, so you can actually visit it. And they have some of the tools that were used for to create the church. So in many cases, by tracing the lineage of the quilt forward to family members who don't even know it exists, we're able to come up with some incredible information that they can provide, photographs, family records. It just adds a level of enhancement to that knowledge that we otherwise couldn't get.
Carolyn, you know, the museum does an absolutely fabulous job, all of you and your staff.
Thank you.
You know, I want to tell everybody they can go to quiltstudy.org, www.quiltstudy.org, and you can go out and see the exhibit quilts and get all the details. And this is running into all the year, right? All of 2012?
Yeah, all year. It's a long exhibition, so you have time to visit it. We're putting more and more information up as we find it. And really what we're hoping is that we're going to find links between other quilts. And this has already happened where quilts in other collections are related to quilts that we have in the collection. And we're hoping to find these families and call them up and say, hey, we have a family quilt, which is a magical, magical moment. And many of the families come to visit then
and see them. Thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah, and that's crazy. So.
We appreciate it so much.
Oh, thanks so much, Pat. We really appreciate joining your show today.
Demonstrations of the latest and greatest quilting products.
We'll be back.
Visit allpeoplequilt.com and click on Tool School.
Welcome back to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. And what a show it is. Strutting down the runway with a fizzle and pop is Pezzi Print by American Jane. Now it's Kate Spain, showcasing waterfalls of color and good fortune. Chloe's Closet is here with a peachy keen idea, combining two classic favorites, flannel and 30s prints. Next, let's take a walk in the woods with Anila Hoy and discover enchanting storybook characters. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
At Stash Books, we work to inspire you to use fabric to create a beautiful handmade lifestyle. We're passionate about inspirational designs, accurate instructions, and finding authors that you want to know and learn from. Visit StashBooks.com for a behind-the-scenes look at this season's new releases, including Modern Minimal by Elisa Haight Carlton, Modern Patchwork by Elizabeth Hartman, and much more. Sign up for our email list at StashBooks.com and get 20% off your next order.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on Watch Videos.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Mark Cesarek is a newcomer to the world of quilting. He has jumped in big time with his fabric designs for Free Spirit. What I really love about Mark's designs are the graphics and the color combinations he uses. He has a ton of enthusiasm for quilting, which is, you know, I think what his fabric really shows us when you look at it. And, you know, he's an artist at heart. That's what his whole career is about. And so I'm really excited to have Mark on to tell us how he goes about translating his artwork into fabric for us to use. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me today. Glad to be here.
Oh, this is exciting. I always love to hear how people work.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you actually get to talk to the artist and understand the processes in which they work, because what's really interesting for me when I meet other designers, other artists, is that many of us have very similar ways in which we work, but at the same time, we all work, you know, very different. So the process is something I've always been very interested in, with my background in fine art and whatnot. So,
Tell me a little bit about that. You know, how did you know when you personally wanted to be an artist? I mean, were you like 2 years old and, you know, painting on the walls and, you know, that was it, or was it later?
You know, I really, to be completely honest with you, I really attribute my career as an artist spanning back to when I was a kid and I was just doodling all the time, whether it was in class or whether it was home. I mean, I was always drawing. I was always doodling. Now, as far as becoming like a professional artist and thinking about having that kind of career, that didn't really, you know, when I graduated high school, I never really even thought about the idea of pursuing art as a career, and it wasn't until a couple of years later I ended up getting back into it and transferring to art school, and here we are 10-12
wow.
years later.
Wow. So did you study fabric at all, fabric design, when you were in art school?
I didn't. I did not, actually. I studied illustration, graphic design, and painting. So really, you know, my background is really more in design and illustration, but obviously, you know, especially with the technology and the software we use, computers and whatnot, it was a really easy transition for me to kind of go more from illustration and design to actually creating patterns, you know, repeat patterns and quilting fabrics and things of that nature.
Now, do you have any quilters in your family?
No. I really, my family has always been a big appreciator of the arts, and they were always a big supporter of me going to art school and me pursuing that when I decided to. But to be completely candid, nobody in my family really quilted. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know much about quilting, to be completely honest with you, until I started, you know, dating my wife, who is really the sewer and the quilter and sort of the backbone behind my, you know, sort of transition from design to, you know, designing fabrics.
Right. So she's
Mark,
I need this fabric. Is that what she was doing? She's like, well, I can't find it.
Well, that's really actually kind of what it was. I mean, it was like late 2007, early 2008. And, you know, my wife is always kind of on the hunt for new fabrics. She's always, you know, looking on websites and looking at, you know, some of the other designers. And it really just started with her discovering Spoonflower and her asking me to design a fabric for a pattern she was making. I think it might have been a handbag or something along those lines. And it wasn't until we, you know, she discovered, well, I should say she, but because she's the one who pushed me into it. But when we discovered spoon flour and we were actually able to really start creating our own fabrics, mm-hmm. You know, I did that a couple times, and then we realized, hey, this is, you know, there's nothing, this is kind of what we like, and there isn't a whole lot out there like this. So we started an online store, and then, you know, one thing led to another, and I signed with Free Spirit a couple of years ago. So
now, it was really kind of for those who aren't aware of what spoon flour is, it's an online site where you can put your designs and have it printed on yardage. So
yeah,
so
that's correct. That's correct.
So tell me a little bit, let's talk about your design process, because,
sure.
you know, when you put together like a collection for a fabric house would be a little bit different than doing just a couple of pieces that had a really specific purpose.
Exactly.
So talk to me about how you think about your collections. I just love that.
Sure. Sure. Thank you so much. You know, I think there's two ways to look at it. And I should back up for a second. I should say that, you know, when you say that it's a different process when you're thinking about a collection as opposed to making one or two prints for individual purposes. I mean, coming up with the collection and making it cohesive really is the, that is the difficult thing, because, you know,
right.
in terms of when I make a collection, there are times when I have an idea in my head of where I want to go. And there are other times when it really just starts from drawing. And, you know, like I said, drawing is the backbone of everything I do. Mm-hmm. So I'm constantly sketching. You know, I have stacks and stacks of sketchbooks. And a lot of times the cohesion of the collection comes from that, and, you know, from the drawing. And then, you know, I bring it over to the computer and, you know, start it on that process. But
When you do your notebooks,
yes.
Are you like really organized? Do you have them like numbered and dated and sequenced?
Not at all. You know, like I said, like I consider myself a professional doodler, really. You know, I know it by my, you know, I know my sketchbooks by sight, really. I mean, I've got about probably 20 sketchbooks right now that are sort of, some of them finished, some of them are not finished, but I kind of know exactly where everything is in my head. But in terms of actual real organization, no, I'm lucky that my wife is very organized. Frankly, we make a really good team, because I guess I'm more of the left-sided mm-hmm. brain functionality, and she's more of the organized, you know, right-sided part of the brain. So,
notebooks, how do you get those designs then into the computer? At some point, you're going to put them in the computer, right?
Yes. Well, you know, there's a couple ways to do it. Sometimes you just use that as a reference, and you bring them in Illustrator or Photoshop, and you kind of just use that as a visual reference. And then quite often, you know, what I'll literally do is, you know, I'll be looking through my sketchbooks. I'll like a couple of motifs, a couple of sketches that I'm working on. I'll scan them into the computer. You know, I'll bring them into Photoshop or Illustrator or, you know, any one of those computer aid design programs, and then I go from there. And, you know, the drawing really just starts out as a reference and involves so much because, of, you know, the process of using the computer, you know, the idea of being able to have, you know, select many colors immediately and to be able to change things around really kind of dictates the process from there. So, you know, the sketchbook starts as a reference. Quite often when I'm finished with it, I look back at the original sketch. It looks tremendously different, but, you know, that's the starting point.
And then how about the colors? You know, what are you doing? Because tell me a little bit maybe just about your latest collection. Maybe you can reference way, the colors and how you went about planning that.
Yes. Well, Cosmic Burst, my last collection from Free Spirit, really, I would say that, you know, just to describe the color collection, it is a very loud and vibrant. I get maybe loud isn't the correct word to use, but it is a very, very vibrant. Exactly. And it was, you know, Cosmic Burst sort of has a sort of reference to, I guess, outer space and, you know, things like that. But it really, to me, was kind of speaking to just kind of an explosion of color and kind of fun. And, you know, there's, you know, you've got some greens, some violets, you know, a little black, some reds. And, you know, it really is a very vibrant color collection that I put together, kind of thinking about, you know, that kind of explosion of color and that sort of, you know, thinking about the cosmos and whatnot. I mean, it's sort of a, the space kind of reference is kind of loosely based, but it does kind of speak to an explosion of color in a sense, I would say.
And do you have, like, in that color palette that you did, how did you build it? Did you use, do you have an art board or something that you collect images to get that color palette?
I guess it depends. In this particular case, generally, I do a lot of searching online and through magazines of color palettes that I like. And so I have a whole lot of cutouts and a whole lot of, different files of reference. And so sometimes I'll see something in a magazine. I'll say, well, I really like this color combination. I'll cut out that page. I'll keep it in my sketchbook and I'll kind of think about it. And, generally it comes from just referencing what I see, on an everyday basis. And in this particular case, there's a lot of trial and error. And like I said, I mean, using the computer gives you a really good opportunity to make a lot of different choices and do it pretty quickly and see how things, you make a couple of color selections, you print it out, you hold them up, you put them next together, you think, well, maybe this doesn't work or maybe this does work. You go back to the computer and it just gives you the computer-aided design process. This is an unbelievable tool to really quickly, make decisions on what works and what doesn't. And, that's generally the process. I mean, it's sort of trial and error. I mean, I might start off with a reference of a color reference that I really want to work with. And then by the end of it, I find that it's almost completely different. There might be only one or two of the base colors that I really wanted to work with. So, again, I think the process becomes the process of elimination. I start out with a lot and I end up with much less.
Yeah, you trim it down. Mark, this has just been awesome. I just loved having you on and hearing how you work.
Well, thank you so much.
Now, I want to give your website before you leave here. It's markces.com is your website.
Yes.
And then you have a blog, too.
Yes, Mark Says is the website because it would be difficult to tell people to go to markcesarek.com because probably nobody would know how to spell that. And then my blog is linked right from there. It's markcesarek.blogspot.com. And, we found that having an online presence has really been, really essential to kind of staying in the community. So it's really been great.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been great. Thank you so much.
American Patchwork and Quilting Radio will be right back with authors Jackie Gehring and Katie Peterson.
Favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Did you know you can find your favorite books from C&T Publishing available as ebooks at ctpub.com? From new releases to classics, there are hundreds of titles to choose from. Ebooks are instant and immediate. No more waiting around for a printed book to be delivered. They take up less space and are easily portable. Plus, ebooks use very few natural resources. Look for the ebook sale button at ctpub.com to save 20% on your ebook purchase. Start browsing now at ctpub.com.
We're back at the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. You can just feel the excitement. Minnick and Simpson are back with Prairie Paisley 2, a collection with the rich, layered look of a well-loved fabric stash. Here comes Sandy Gervais getting sassy with this bright and cheerful line. Up next, Deb Strain's Tend the Earth is bringing the peaceful feeling of a garden to the runway. Ooh la la, it's Bunny Hill Designs, and baby's going to Paris. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm really happy to have new authors, Jackie Garrick and Katie Peterson, on. They are modern quilters. They did not start out in the world of traditional patchwork. And what I really like is that their work is different, it's exciting, and how they think about their work, even though the style may not be what you quilt with, you can take what they do and how they talk about their work and apply it to all the things that you love to do. I think that's one of the most exciting things that I love about these authors. So we're going to get them on here. Hi, Jackie, and hi, Katie. How are you today?
Hello. Hi, Pat.
Hi. So, Jackie, why don't you first tell me, why did you decide to learn to quilt?
Oh, gosh. Well, one day I went to the G's Bend exhibit, and I came home that day, and I told my husband, honey, I'm done. And I quit my job and decided to make a quilt.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Really.
Oh.
And from there, I pretty much taught myself to quilt. My mother and my grandmother taught me to sew. But I taught myself to quilt.
So the G's Bend that was it for you. That was the kind of quilting you loved.
You know, there was something about their quilts that were so artistic and free, and you know, there was a little bit of whimsy there. And of course, I bought the books right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had an opportunity later on to actually hear the quilters talk about their work.
Mm-hmm.
And they're an amazingly inspiring group, and you know, it motivated me to sew my first two pieces of fabric together.
Katie, what about you? What pushed you, like, sort of over the edge into working with fabric? Because, you know, one of the things I love about your blog is your tagline, "So Katie did because thread is the best glue."
Well, my mom was always a quilter and always doing crafts. It wasn't until I was in my 30s that she actually started teaching me some technique. We went to a fabric store. I'd always had an appreciation of her more traditional quilts, but I went fabric shopping with her and saw all the new fabrics that I didn't know existed. And that kind of hooked me. And then just the online presence I started seeing of less traditional quilts, those really appealed to me. That's where I started.
That's where you started. Just so fabric is really what got you going, Katie.
Yeah, and seeing other people outside the box, Jackie and some other quilters, seeing what they were doing as well, that appealed to me a lot more than some of the traditional patterns that I had grown up seeing.
So this is how you found Jackie then, was sort of stalking her blog. Was that it that you...
Yeah, I did find her online. I Googled, it was either modern or improvisational quilting, and she was one of the first that popped up, and we developed a relationship online. That's where a lot of it started.
Now, did you start writing each other by email or just commenting and became friends that way?
I think
we did. Go ahead, Katie.
Go ahead. Well, what I remember most was Jackie did an improvisational kind of quilt along where she asked for blocks, Project Improv. I involved myself with that, and then we started kind of emailing back and forth a little bit about that project. Is that how you remember it, Jackie?
It is, and I mean, essentially, we've been online dating for a couple of years.
I know, it feels like that, doesn't it? When you get to know people like almost intimately on the internet, and then you meet them in person. Have you guys met in person? Because I know some authors haven't.
Yes, several times. We've hooked up here in Seattle and when Jackie still lived in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting off the plane in the airport and getting into Katie's car and saying, you know, you're not a knife-wielding stalker. And Katie has always said to me that I'm the best blind date she's ever had.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Jackie, tell me what made the two of you decide to do a book together? Let's talk about this book called Quilting Modern from Interweave.
Well, you know, from that online relationship, Katie and I really discovered that our styles were very similar, and more importantly, our processes were very similar. I think we kind of really bonded over the whole improvisational idea. Our aesthetics were very much the same. And, you know, because we had become friends, when the idea of the book came up, and Katie can talk a little bit more about that, how that happened.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, Katie, so tell us about the idea. Was it, you know, did you come up with it?
Well, I was actually contacted by a publisher about writing an improvisational book. Jackie and I, though, were both at different stages in our lives with our families. We both have a high level of commitment still to them. So I just thought it would be better to have someone to hold hands with through this process, make it more fun and more of a doable idea. So I wrote Jackie an email asking her if she might be interested in collaborating on a book, and she instantly wrote me back and said yes. She'd kind of had the same thing happen. Publisher had contacted her, so we exchanged our proposals, and they were eerily similar, I believe, was what Jackie said originally when we talked on the phone.
That must have been really strange, Jackie, to see the proposal Katie was doing, and you guys were thinking so much alike.
Well, you know, it was kind of wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And look what it's led to. So we were actually really pleased.
So tell me about the concept of the book. Who's more comfortable with that, Jackie, Katie?
Go ahead, Jackie.
Well, let me just go there. I mean, I always call it a teach a gal to fish instead of a give a gal a fish kind of book. And it really evolved from Katie's and my processes. You know, we're not kind of pattern people. We like to have our quilts evolve and work through that improvisational process. And from our blogs, we get a lot of questions on how do you do this? How do you do this? How do you keep that strip piecing straight? You know, technique questions. And so it kind of naturally fit that we would focus on techniques in the book. And I've been a teacher for almost 30 years, and so teaching is kind of in my blood, and that's what I love to do. So the book kind of revolves around those seven techniques. And, you know, we want people, you know, if they're pattern kind of people, we want them to be able to duplicate the quilts that we put in the book. But right. We also want them to be able to learn so that they can take, you know, their own ideas, their own designs, and go wherever they want to go as well.
So, Katie, why don't you tell me why you had seven techniques? Was there a reason? You know, was that just sort of what it boiled down to?
We wanted people to have options. There's a lot of really easy techniques, all of them are fairly easy to do, but we wanted people to maybe have something that they might gravitate towards. So those were seven that Jackie and I really liked and had some ideas. Some we had to develop some of the projects along the way. So that was kind of it.
So tell me, Jackie, tell me about one of the techniques. Maybe explain a little bit about how somebody who's a traditional person can jump into your book.
Well, I think a traditional person is going to recognize a lot of the techniques. For example, strip piecing. Traditional folks use that. Modern folks use that. Art quilters use that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a technique that's familiar to all of us. But we can just, first of all, learn how to do it and do it well, and then take it in whatever direction we want to go in.
What about color and fabrics? Katie, could you tell me a little bit about how, for the book, you talk about, you know, fabric use?
Well, neither of us really likes using one line of fabric, so that was really important for us in the book to make our projects different, how fabrics work together, and encourage people to have a lot of fun playing with fabric, not to be married to that pile that they initially chose, maybe cut some pieces and put them up on the design wall and see how they interact together. I think a lot of people put projects down because they're disappointed with the first outcome of a block. We worked back and forth with each other a lot on photos and email, seeing how fabric interacted and what we liked. And sometimes Jackie and I wouldn't agree on what we had to come together in a final round of fabric choices. It's important for people to think about value in their quilts, not just the prints and colors.
And you don't use just solids, which, you know, I think some people think, oh, you know, all the quilts have to have just solid fabrics if they're modern. But you don't go with that philosophy, do you, Katie?
Certainly not. I mean, I think a lot of us are drawn to quilting because we have a love affair of prints.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, using different scale fabrics and different value is important to make your quilting really shine and your design really have contrast and come out.
And don't we really want all the options that we can possibly get?
Of
solid,
course.
Print, tone on phones. We
exactly.
want them all.
Yes.
So do you have a tip, Jackie, if the block isn't working? What do you tell somebody?
Well, the design wall is so important to Katie and I in our process, and we really recommend that people put something up on that design wall and stand back. It's so much easier to see value, to see how your prints, how your colors are working together when you stand back and use that design wall. That's kind of number one for us. And, you know, another tip, sometimes you just need to put it away and come back to it tomorrow.
That happened a lot for us working on
that. We do
that
often.
Right, and you have to let it gel a little bit, don't you? Sometimes you can't force it. You need to think about it. I have one on my wall right now that I've messed around with for days, just, you know, tweaking a little bit here, a little bit there.
Exactly. Yeah, it's certainly part of the process.
Part of the process to play and have fun and, you know, like Katie said earlier, don't marry yourself to that first choice. It's okay to change.
I think that's something that all quilters can take away. That's really why I'm very excited about your work, the two of you, because what you're saying can go across the board. We're gonna take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about, I want to talk to you about the design you put on top of the whole package, the quilting, and how you to think about your quilt as a whole, you know, with the quilting and the pattern and the fabric. So we're going to take a break from American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and then we'll be back with Jackie and Katie.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Whatever your style, whatever your skill, you'll find everything you need to start sewing today at PatternSpot.com, the downloadable pattern marketplace. It's a one-stop shop with hundreds of designers and thousands of patterns all online under one virtual roof. Go to PatternSpot.com and sign up for our email list to get 20% off your next purchase. From quilts, home decor, and wearables to fabric crafts and accessories, PatternSpot.com is your one-stop pattern shop.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Win $10,000 cash to stock your stash. Enter today to win the ultimate $10,000 crafting giveaway at allpeoplequilt.com/craft giveaway.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm here with authors Jackie Gehring and Katie Peterson. If they're talking about their book, Quilting Modern Techniques and Projects for Improvisational Quilts. So, Jackie, where can people buy your book?
Well, you can buy it directly from Interweave. I'm sure hoping you can buy it at your local quilt store.
Yes.
If it's not there, please go in and ask. We'd love to support our local quilt shop.
Okay, good. So, Katie, why don't you tell me first about sort of your thought process of how you incorporate the quilting of the quilt along with the design? It's like you're thinking about the whole package, aren't you?
Well, I think often when Jackie and I design a quilt, truthfully, the quilting is kind of the last final stage, and often the idea for the design doesn't come until the quilt top is finished. It's kind of part of the process. If you don't know the exact final design of the quilt, it's kind of hard to get as far as the quilting. Sometimes it does come right away. A few of the quilts we worked with are long arm quilter Angela Walters, and she is a fantastic artist and had some ideas. Jackie and I would just collaborate towards the end, wondering if it would a more organic feel or a more linear feel, and the quilting would enhance the design. Jackie, do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, the quilting is such an important part of the design. It's an opportunity to add to the design of your quilt, as is the binding, also a design opportunity. And, you know, some of us feel like we're limited by our skills. Like, you know, we're not really good free-motion quilters or we're not really good straight-line quilters. But you know what? Even everybody can think about their quilt top and kind of think about how quilting lines will enhance what they've done on the design. We really believe that every quilt kind of deserves its own unique treatment.
And your book has lots of great photos of the quilting that you used, whether you did it or whether Angela added to it. That was important for this book, right?
You mean the actual photographs in the book?
Right. The photographs of the machine quilting. So you have like up close pictures of it and even some diagrams.
Those beautiful photos were done by Joe Hancock, and we can't thank him enough. You know, we felt it was really important to show the quilting design in our chapter where we talk quilt as desired.
Right.
You know, we did some hand drawings to show different ideas, different options. There are so many ways to quilt a quilt out there. So we tried to give people at least a few hints and some reasons why we quilted the quilts the way we did, and Angela quilted the quilts the way she did, also.
Right. Yeah, yes, I think that's one of my favorite parts about your book is how you incorporate the whole package. So the quilting is just as important in the end as the top and the fabrics and everything else.
Absolutely.
So when you're out and about, like either on your blog or whether you're teaching, you know, you get a lot of questions that people ask you. And I, you know, Katie, you told me one of the things that people ask you is, how long does it take you to make a quilt? What do you tell them?
That was the biggest question I got at my exhibit. It's kind of a funny question because Jackie and I were talking about it earlier, that sometimes you can do a quilt in a week, a couple weeks, but there's quilts that have been under my bed for 2 years still waiting for their day. And it goes back to what Jackie was saying about sometimes you just have to put it away. You don't know where to go with it next. So I just put it away, and then maybe I'll see something that'll spark an idea, and you go from there. So it depends on the quilt. Each is so unique.
Jackie, you have, when you're out teaching, and now that you're teaching quilting, you know, what you get a question about your ideas and inspirations. You know, where does all that come from? What do you tell people?
So people always ask that question, where do you get ideas for your quilts? And, you know, it's really easy to say that inspiration is everywhere, but it really is. And I've, over the last couple of years, I've really tried to teach myself to notice and to look, because you can walk by a whole lot of wonderful stuff that can inspire you to make a quilt and not even notice it. You know, I just
give me an example, Jackie. What's one thing that maybe you can think of that did that?
Yeah, I just moved to Chicago, and you know, I walk my dog every day, many times a day. And as I'm walking on, I was walking through the city and started noticing I was either walking under or over or around or above a bridge. And I started noticing all these bridges and the shapes and the curves and the lines. And I just literally couldn't wait to get back to my studio to start exploring those kind of lines, and made a bridges quilt. And that's all about noticing what you're walking by, what you're looking at. I'm sitting here on the sofa looking at a picture of the ceiling of the Guggenheim Museum in New York that my son took. And I'm looking at that ceiling thinking, that would be an amazing quilt. So it's really all about noticing. For me also, you know, every quilt for me has a story, and it kind of comes from inside. My life, my experiences, my kids, my family, those kind of things kind of pour themselves out into fabric for me. And, you know, so it's kind of part of who I am, where my inspiration comes from.
Katie, how do you think about your inspiration? Are you inspired the same way, or is yours a little different?
I would say I'm pretty inspired the same way. Just being observant, looking at a lot of art, photographs, same thing, walking around, other people's things inspire you. Sometimes it's just a fabric that inspires you. The process can start in different places and in different ways.
Now, the other thing that I found interesting when we were chatting is that you both work in small studios. But I think, Jackie, you may have just, this is a new recent thing for you, the small studio.
It's definitely recent, and I'm having to get used to it. I moved from Kansas City to Chicago, and from a nice house in the country with a really big basement that was my studio, to a 1,000-square-foot apartment in the city with a tiny little room for my studio. So I'm learning now how to work in a small space, but Katie is the expert in small space sewing.
So are you holding her hand, Katie? Are you, you know, talking her off the roof on this one?
She did have an amazing studio. I was joking with her the other day that when we got together, I don't think we could have done it in her little Chicago studio. We have what I have, we call the Labudio at my house. It's our living room studio, and I constantly apologize to my family that I'm taking over the living room, but it's just very compact and efficient and organized, and it forces me to clean up in between stages of the process. Mm-hmm. So I can collapse everything down, and it helps keep me focused. And I actually quite like it. It allows me to spend time with my family and do what I love to do. So I wouldn't have that opportunity if I had a room away from them.
Do you have a particular item in your small space that is key? Like if other people have small spaces, they should be doing what you're doing?
I created a double design wall. One is just a regular design wall, and then on top of that, I have a laminate back design wall. I sewed a double ribbon to the top so that I can roll up that top design wall, and the laminate keeps everything in place, and then just tie it up so I can work on two projects at one time.
And for me... Mm-hmm. go ahead, Pat.
I was just going to say, Jackie, what about you?
Well, for me, I don't have room for an ironing board. If I did put it up, I'd trip over it all the time. So what I did is I took a bookshelf, which is a storage shelf, a metal storage shelf, and I store fabric below. But I took the top board, which was particle board, and I padded it a little bit and covered it in fabric and placed that on top, and I used that as an ironing station. Mm-hmm. So I can press as I work, and then still I have four shelves underneath filled with fabric. So in that same footprint, I'm getting a whole lot of storage, plus I have a really sturdy ironing surface that I can't knock over, and it doesn't take up, you know, I don't have to set up an ironing board unless I'm doing, you know, large quilt tops or something like that. And if I do that, I move into the living room.
But yeah. Then you expand. You expand.
Exactly. I call it my studio annex.
Yeah. Everyone needs one.
Katie, tell me your website.
SoKatieDid.wordpress.com.
And Jackie, how about you?
And mine's TallGrassPrairieStudio.blogspot.com.
You know, both of you do a lot of things on your blog. People should come out and visit you. And then your book is Modern Quilting, Techniques and Projects for Improvisational Quilts, which can be purchased from your local store or from Interweave. So I want to thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Thanks, Pat. It was great.
We'll see you next time. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We are on Facebook and Twitter, so if you're on either of those, please come on out and join us. We do lots of things on Facebook, like chat about what's going on in the magazines. We're doing features with the shops from the Quilt Sampler magazine. So you want to come out and see that. On Twitter, there's a pretty large community. You can go and chat more, you know, one-on-one with the editor that's out there Twittering away. Our website, allpeoplequilt.com, we have lots of tips, and there's free patterns and techniques, plus the videos. You've heard us talk about videos on all different things from sewing to techniques to just, you know, picking fabric and doing other things like that. So this has been a great week here at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. Next week, we'll be back with a segment from the trade show, from Quilt Market. So I'm your host, Pat Sloan, from American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. See you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to